Permanent Wave. Permanent Wave to Paul, that's Kurt Wurton, Alexander Wave to Billy, that's in Gurla or all in Shinigan. What I thought I might do tonight is mostly read from a new book of poems in Irish that I haven't really read very much from before. You get a little bit comfortable with certain poems over many years, and partly because over time you think you found a way of presenting them, and certain stories that can be told with them help them to maybe assert themselves. And it's as often as not the case with newer poems that you're not entirely comfortable with them yet, to the point where you can tell easily stories that allow people ways in and out them, because you're now a reader yourself of them and you're trying to find your own way through them. So I'm just going to read two poems from The Brindle Cat and The Nightingale's Tongue, and then the rest of the poems would be from a book that just came out in 2016. The Brindle Cat and The Nightingale's Tongue, the title is courtesy of Gerry Murphy, who gets full credit in the inclusion, by way of the inclusion of a short poem that is called Translation and Its Discontents, which perhaps I should just read before going on then to read the poems in both Irish and English. This is Gerry's poem, Translation and Its Discontents. Stark moonlit silence. The brindled cat is chewing the nightingale's tongue. At the very best, you could say Gerry is slightly ambivalent about the project of translation. And, I thought that was a nice title to include. This is a poem called An Tauranni, or The Singer, and so far at least, to the best of my knowledge, is the only poem of mine that has had lines from it used as a tattoo. I was asked permission, and having spent 3 years as a proofreader, I thought it best to pretend I hadn't received the email. This horror that somebody has made a mistake in the tattoo itself. But anyway, you can have a guess yourselves as to which line it's in. An Tauranni. Is doilish a mertos machor gur leo son na vain a lauren. Nor a chanan na gul tri graver. Is fada le barra a mair go mishid sa valia. Is cad shan a mair a chéle co go maidin. Is at le hain a rain is le hir le anain go mach faun briste a gríha ar var a hanga ag fair nar casagor a hanna. Nor a vuilin na srangin a siadda, a chanil da chéil an chéad la riaviad, dridin an lánuin fósta da maiachas i le hechéra. Nor a chimlíin ilin a léin a siúd le gúling a vaná, buinin faróg ar hevel an tómra a jansi sór in do, is íran ar ar a tí a tassi slú in anin díl a shdé. Gwyin an chalín a wil oilacht an vróin na gmúnsh, gomishe gan chéla nu gwaise í. He's to hear in front of me, think he's singing to only them. And he plays a loving lament, their fingers ache to be home, where they can play on each other until morning. The lonely and the old flames are amazed, a man they've never met, has the broken tunes of their dreams off by heart and the tip of his tongue. When he touches the strings that tie them together the first time ever, the married couple in the corner move closer in spite of themselves. And the sleeve of the man's shirt brushes his wife's shoulder. A young fella at the other end of the room takes off his summer jumper and asks the barman to turn the heat down for God Almighty's sake. The girl, made lovely by sorrow, prays he'll never rest until he finds her. Outside, a fleet of sirens storms the night. Squad cars, ambulances and fire brigades running from the fire that can't be put out in the smouldering hearts of the men inside, who are late again for the never-ending funeral. Beside the bridge, the Morse code of loneliness, broadcast on flurries of air, is clear as day to the man who has just jumped. The water is smooth as a sheet, and he is deaf to the world as the music fills his mouth, washing away a world of worries. The singer keeps on strumming the strings that stretch from the heart to the mouth of his guitar. His cry is soft as the river, a blanket of water drawn up over all our sleepy heads. An tishke chomín le barilín, is thawn áling an chioil in a veil a vaura ar vúir of an cael. Lianan an kioltor a shemant ar na strangan a fulla a heen and on grieg a dee bail a guitar, a chine, a shave, a clean a home, a taunt, a sorghum, the air. The poem's called The Singer on Tauranni, but as much as anything else, it's about a place, and the place is the Lobby Bar, which many of you will remember, and one of those unusual places. This place is probably one of them too, where so often extraordinary things happen that you actually go there prepared for magic to happen, and that communicates itself to the people around the stage, and this extraordinary leap takes place, I think, that an audience feels a part of. And that particular poem, everything that's in it either happened in the room on a particular night or happened in one of the songs that was sung. And again, so the challenge of writing a poem would be so that you can tell which bits were sung and which bits I made up or were in my head that night and which bits actually did happen in the room. So it's a particular kind of a poem. So I really like the American poet Billy Collins said somewhere, he likes poems that begin in Kansas and end up in Oz. So it's can you make reality and imagination so that they're indistinguishable? Sometimes that's the challenge, at least, I think. So I love poem, and then we'll move on to more new poems. This is called Marmalade. And, again, because I know there's a lot of people here who are writing themselves, you know, you're like, it doesn't really change as you go on. You're always looking and you're moving words around for them to move away from you in an interesting direction, and then you have to follow them, even if you're thinking this is going to end badly some way or other after the fact of having it written. But you're trying for something to happen that takes on a life of its own, and it doesn't happen as often as you'd like it to, but I think it happened when I was writing this poem. It certainly happened when I was writing it. If that communicates itself to you, then so much the better. Buine ma chabín den broca súbar áiste, is líon an anvaidin de vla sharaf, ni ha milish, Algiers, Morocco, Seville, mar will buomi cúra crochta hiagan agrón. Na rafléascan ar a dal of bán, ni cína will rian fulla trí his dishilion, lushter an trair mór hímpel le glóre of loide, is marabí sroide, in oitin an aros riav, ach gar cuín am a hrón ar a hunson, an la sharaf, ni ha Milish. Nor ilim an gishtin treach thy master her touring the gate free. Mahrua de hion boch there's a tussa of his pussort. Ishupan vushdere chanis na rajdish in an a. I guess mission may hain yin the fid marmalade. Milish of his sharab maris malate. Godirach a derum ship. I guess buomi kura the hollinga lushkan air and kinko. On ray of loid tusna hana. And Mara the Stride and Machri, Deer of Hineke, the Shaston and the Rajdi. I open the jar of marmalade, and morning fills with the bitter, sweet taste of Algiers, Morocco, Seville, where fragrant bombs hang from tree branches. And they burst on the bare ground, I like the ones with blood in them best. The air is scorched all around with the noise of revolution. And street markets in places I have never been, but still my nose remembers their bitter, sweet smell. When I return to the kitchen, worn out from wandering beyond the borders of the senses, get real, you say, fronging. I bought those oranges yesterday in the butcher's, and it was I who made your marmalade, bittersweet, the way you like it. Exactly, I say, as your body's fragrance detonates, burning the air all around me. The riot has already started in the street market of my heart, just there beside the stall of oranges. This is a poem called Luck. And you'll see why it's called Luck for several reasons, but amongst other reasons, it's a short poem by Langston Hughes, a great African-American poet, part of the Harlem Renaissance. And it's one of those poems where you try to just write what happened as you think you remember it having happened. And the translation is a little bit rough and ready, but I'll read part of it in Irish and then the translation and see how we go with it. And here it goes. So Subway, Fevon, Madison Square Garden, Time in Mayan or Erdera. Driadar na hi herer, a suha mochid fulla, Mochri a gradafin, Dornali mata, na cleoch, mala papair. Dirach agus an glor mittel a fogart gul an train ar tia machta, Reaban fair gorum treed an doris te hirbun, Ropan treed an slua, is amach caon elan car. Ha Pauline in isher gach peiv dien, gunny yamuk is i the guide treed an garashta, ho cuing le shantelia par uaha. In the subway under Madison Square Garden, and finally on my own, what's left of last night's madness, a disturbance in the blood, my heart beating itself up like a boxer who couldn't fight his way from a paper bag. Just as the metal voice announces our departure, a young black man bursts through the door behind me, pushes through the crowd and out again at the far end of the carriage. There are police everywhere, guns out as they move through the compartment, as silently as the one thereafter. Other passengers hardly bother to look at this dull, deadly drama they've seen too often before, but my eyes are out on stalks and my heart beating itself without respite. There's a short poem by Langston Hughes above the door, and I'm trying for the life of me to read it to calm my chicken belly. Sometimes a crumb falls from the tables of joy. Now or never, I tell myself. Read on till you see, is there an answer to the question the non-readers of non-poetry always ask? What in God's name or what the fuck has a poem to say for itself in this merciless valley of tears? Read slowly, the Polish poet said, as if you were reading the menu in an expensive restaurant. Sometimes a crumb falls from the tables of joy. Sometimes a bone is flung. The door closes and the iron horse moves forward with creaking harness through winter's tunnel between two darknesses. Sometimes a crumb falls from the tables of joy. Sometimes a bone is flung. To some people, love is given. To others, only heaven. Thank you. A few short poems, maybe just in sequence one after the other, and a lot of the poems in the book are about fathers and sons. In fact, there are three generations interacting with each other. I think it's probably not a relationship that's as well explored as it might be in literature, and where it is, it's usually in the negative. And I'm just curious about it. It doesn't have to be the case that the father is my father or that the son is my son, but it's a relationship that, for the reasons just given, I'm particularly curious about. And so that's one aspect of these poems. Another aspect is trying to cut the language of poetry to its bare minimum. The idea that Patrick Kavanagh had, that he should be, he said, able to play a true note on a dead slack string. I really like that idea, to make very, very simple, ordinary language carry freight beyond what it usually carries, I suppose. And then finally, the first two at least, I'm curious about the way in which we attach so much meaning or invest so much of ourselves in inanimate objects that have extraordinarily powerful personal resonances for us, and that they're completely real and completely true and yet entirely idiosyncratic and invented almost. So the first of these poems is called Clegini or Bells, the second one is called Luascoin or Swings. Pan Vaidin ho socer gonamara gu brushin Clegin on ifig gibula I glos on togali ya vile on dig. Vashta ko hetrum, gomrahim giran oil maher, says smitter blokken a aimut, or hulan tea a gorkwik. Nor rayam of am mon gishtum, arian sheva her fein, or all in a aher, chattestachan yin air, sar vuroche. She dimly in a beach, is the aher ko gardadol in a cracking fein. And vidin ko soccer, go glushin she cliggy nifige in agine vic, bliant a fado valia, or allish. Go to Rohan Dientha Gegafoil, Tachtestachanish, sort of roisce. So Vardin full of Taluascon Gorum Maluasca, Ganena of Ru, O Hirshigan Clay, than Ober Danabui, Ganbuerus. Na Corrig Aderum, Ishendanak and the Young. Na Ligurt, Grafader at Haine Yamov. Umrahat to alive with the Grom, a glor crust of Maria or Rayat, Grafador Ria Behordit to Vaobata, to Haine, of course, Naflash Yoga, Ganena to the Ru. Dar Noin Aderum. Is an aher a magine, is a vaca fiachan tree, balog lav ritamach, or Lewis gone gorum, tal Lewis gagoni or egan, is a gardine full of. Ganenya of ru, enya maecher. Bells. This morning is so quiet in Connemara that you hear the office bell ringing in the builder's yard, half a mile from here. The rain, so light, I feel my father's heavy breath as he chops wooden blocks behind the house in Cork. When my mother calls out from the kitchen, he hears his own mother telling his father to come in for his dinner before it gets cold. He's 10 years old and his father is as close to him as his own skin. The morning, so still, he hears an office bell in his son's head, years away from home, telling him he's done enough for now. To come in before he goes cold. Sorry, 2 seconds. Sorry. Your grand. In the empty garden, there's a blue swing barely moving and no one pushing it since the wind got tired of its childish, thankless work. Don't move yet, I tell the child in my mind. Don't let on, you can do it yourself, till you feel his hand at your back, his voice pretending to be cross as he tells you, you're old enough now to be able to push yourself as high as you want to without anyone having to push you. Of course, I say to the father in my mind and his son looking out through the half-drawn blind and a blue swing still moving but only just in the empty garden with no one to push it, no one at all. Actually, I'll read, two poems. Sorry, I'm a bit disorderly here. I wasn't quite sure which poems I might read for you. This is a poem called Hatthi, Hats, and I could take an hour to introduce to you, and it wouldn't be worth that, but I do need to say to you that I studied at UCC, and in my second year of college, I started off doing a creative writing course. It was the only one you could do at UCC at the time, with Sean O'Toole in Irish, and nobody had ever registered for the course before, and because I was already writing poems, he said, well, that'll be too easy, you know, so you can't just write poems for the year. So he set me the task of writing a three-act play, and about 6 weeks later I came in and I told him that I couldn't keep going, that I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't paying attention in any of my classes, that I was totally consumed by the play and I had to give it up. And rightly so, he was saying, that's a really good sign, like, that you can't sleep. And I said, no, you know, it's too much and it's way beyond me. But the story, he'd given me a book of folklore, and he took away a whole set of books of folklore, and he said, go through all that and see, is there a story there that you think you could do a modern reading of? And we both came up with the same story, which is the story of the mermaid coming up out of the sea for love of a man who hides this hat in different stories. It can be a cloak or whatever, but in these particular versions it was the hat was hidden in the attic, which she finds years later, and then abandons, has no thought for her husband, her children, abandons her children to go back into her own element. And he was very taken with the fact that we both liked the story, and he said, you get where we're going at here, don't you? And I said, I have no idea, Sean, I just like the story. And he said, well, what we're really proposing here is that the archetypal Irish mother is a mermaid. Yeah. And that basically, so we were talking through, and he said that's what the story means, is that the woman forsakes her own nature for love, comes up out of the water, but it's always there, present, and when she restores herself to her full nature, she has no thought for abandoning everything else to return to it. So that's why the poem is called Hati or Hats. And there's a little epigraph here to the poem, a line from one of the poems, one of the dream songs John Berryman wrote when he was in Dublin, the first line of which says, "Hold on to me and we'll both drown." And this is Hati. Er hugis fernera glas a gwyd grwyge, lecna is imini data. Sui le lasta ar ein da is gara, leis na headi I nua gala. Áhas a shillio o rin go soil. Na maná man eesta, a parti a lianí is a vara va agant. Iet a suas im ar a ti, mar a vuurder peini a vi uaha ar fan im lian. Nar a visa go hain cabé mo go vuurder e. Nier hug ar sa tu go thur. Ag im achtam doras amach, agus cúrach duit a chúrach airc ar nónín. Hat a vintage in us or lap wheel glass, a will dinnis no mara fossing to. Forig bog is fair, manai gul gan stop, buche levine a dol fui, a reish is a reishella, the vuiachus, bogober do ball on it, traw. So in the translation it's called Hats Off. Have you noticed how their hair shines, the colour of their cheeks and nails, eyes lit, shaped and shaded to match their bright new clothes, happiness dripping from them, head to toe. The middle-aged women who were about to leave their husbands and children locked up in the attic where they found whatever it was they were looking for all these years, only they didn't realise what it was till they found it. "I did not," you say, heading out the door, smelling so sweet you give a daisy bad thoughts. A vintage hat tilted over one eye that is still sea deep, full of shipwrecks and man wrecks, women crying, and one boy who keeps going down again and again, no matter how you try to stop him. He almost drowned in you once. And, just a couple more. This is a poem, I just read this in translation because it's slightly longer. It's called Multitasking, which everybody knows women are spectacularly better than men, so that's the idea here as well. There's a reference in this poem to John Benville, and the first time I ever read the poem, I was about to launch into it. It was at the Flat Lake Festival that Pat McCabe organised, and next thing John Benville walked straight across in front of me. with a bottle of Chablis in his hand. A little disconcerting, but he was happy.
Wasn't book fast enough.
Flinty Chablis, I think, was what it was described as. So here we go, here's Multitasking. There's a reference to a novel by Banville. It's Birchwood, which I think is probably my favourite novel of his. "There's no point telling me it's a trick the light and dust made up to deceive me. That it was your reflection I saw in the window as I washed the dishes this morning, listening to the radio in the corner where you ironed the children's clothes, half listening to me as usual, giving out about the world and its ways. No, I was not dreaming. I saw you clear as day with my own two eyes going past the gable end of the house just now, when I knew in my mind you were there behind me, letting on to be listening to me and the dead radio. For the sake of peace, I didn't even bother glancing sideways over my shoulder to try and catch you inside and out at one and the same time. After 25 years and more of this, I know it's no bother at all to you to be there alongside me and away somewhere else I can't follow you. Unlike your man in Banville's novel, who's about to go through the French doors in the Anglo-Irish mansion when he turned back for the last moment, and was afflicted by the most incredible loneliness for the rest of his life, for the person he might have become had he stepped through the glass door between him and himself. You, on the other hand, can be there and not there, inside and out whenever you like, coming and going as you please through the window I never closed between you and yourself, just in case you might want to follow her, the young woman who went out through the French doors all those years ago and is still waiting at the gable wall. I hear you singing quietly behind me, a sure sign you're in with yourself again. When the singing stops, I feel your eyes go right through me as I stare out the window at the woman I've been following all my life and never managed to catch up with. If I went as far as the gable wall, my love, it's unlikely I'd ever turn back. I might just read this in the translation too if we can find it. This is a poem called Rhododendrons, and it's a wedding poem. And again, it's something that more or less happened, or at least this is how I remember it happening. Rhododendrons. In the empty church by the waterfall, a young couple from Mullingar walk the narrow aisle of happiness for the first time since the wedding. Their eyes have grown accustomed to the semi-dark as they approach in their denim jeans the altar where the perpetual light of hope still flickers. The scent of rhododendrons blows through a small hole in the stained glass of their memory, and the bride is having trouble lighting her white candle at the railings. All around, the air is on fire, and her hand shakes as it did that day the future placed its old gold ring on her finger. Her husband catches her moist hand, and the hot tears of the candle scald his soft skin. The rhododendrons breathe a fragrant sigh. They can't wait for another wedding to go to in their lovely purple dresses. Thank you. Just one more poem and then a short little thing that I might finish up with, if that's okay. This is a poem called Paidir Americana I an Nollag Nuaruk, American Prayer, Christmas Eve in New York. And I'll just read part of it and then the poem and see what you make of it. I have nothing useful to say about the newer poems. That's the trouble with new poems, that you're not quite certain that they're saying what you think they're saying just yet, so it's best not to say anything at all. But this is as close to a prayer, a secular prayer, I think, as I'm capable of. Tan fuaran trim sa fark, shuk ar a bhéir mar a godalíoch dín ag an dídan, na gur leap sneacht a gan an ní a bhrat marafach in an áit. Tá sé róúr de vangarí drogaí, caffi, hot dogs a soda, the Vadri Lahi is in Rory Fiddler, the Manog a Yilach, the Ghaira Fein a Resha, the Arbuin a Golur, a Himad of Sui Lipper, the Rashok, a Khan Saur, a Fad, the Fire, a Rachar, the Bibra, Fehe Urlar, Fe Von, a Khrog. The park fountain is bone dry, frost on the grass where the homeless slept, till virgin snow unfolded its lethal blanket in their place. Too cold now for peddlers of drugs, coffee, hot dogs and soda, for lapdogs and chessmen, for the young woman who'd sell your own smile back to you for a dollar, for the pigeon fiend who kept a leopard eye on the hawk that spent all summer stalking his little friends 20 floors below his claws. Shauna the psychic is on vacation in Costa Rica, worn out by the hopes of her flock. Petrified they'll be sued, she'll be sued for not sharing her happiness equally among them. But the church is still open, candles flickering before the altar, like upraised fists at the funeral of a fallen idol, or plastic lighters at a country concert, where Felix, the mute sacristan, is about to blow them out. A sad sack or three are still hanging around the bookshop, and a young widow in the arthouse cinema next door is surprised she can't cry anymore at the end of an old black and white film. In the music shop, strings pray there'll be respite tonight from the awkward fumbling of the wind, its never-ending whine. In the fish tank, in the closed hypermarket, prehistoric lobster broadcast bubbles of air like dialogue balloons in an old Czechoslovak cartoon. The Black Knight Watchman is as tired as the sea, the lights from his two mobile phones winking like a schizophrenic Christmas tree in his jaded eyes. On the last subway from Brooklyn, the illegals are dreaming of home when Mr. Bojangles and his three angelic companions board the train. "Hello, New York," he says, black face gleaming with sweat, bright as the shine on his patent leather shoes. "Tough crowd, Miss Temple, tough crowd," he smiles, gap-toothed like a child when he sees George Washington's wig drop in his paper purse. "Well, I won't be afraid." Shut your two eyes right now, child, and let crooked love for every crooked creature fill you till you become all merciful and helpless as a god who would heal every pain, every broken heart, if he could.
Thank you very much. You're very good. I just wanted to finish with this short poem, which I was asked by Michael D. Higgins, pleased to say, years ago, would I write a poem for a thing he was organising in Áras an Uachtaráin, which was to be broadcast to Irish emigrants on St. Patrick's Day. I didn't think the programme worked terribly well. I didn't really think the poem worked terribly well. But last year, the centenary 1916 made more sense of the poem, and I was very fortunate that through the year, Stephen Ray chose the poem for a presentation he was organising in New York and then in Dublin, and I was there when he read it in Dublin, and it made far more sense when he spoke it. So it's a 21st century response to Pierce's poem, Misha Era, and it's called Mdleach, the Vital D. Higgins. So it's a bilingual poem, and there's copies of it here if people want to just leave them maybe up here for after. You don't feel that you have to take them. I'm a bit embarrassed if they're out there, make them to collect them afterwards. But here we go anyway, here's on play. Shinga era, shinna shing na kuchulin, is an chaylach vera, na na flaha, forever shan rith eag de chris. Shinga era, oiga shing na piersach vis o kneela, na childers ach reloiv yo son na squeele. We are Ireland, older than Cúchulainn and the Hag of Beara, than the chieftains our ancestors served before the death of Christ. We are Ireland, younger than Pierce and Connolly, than Childers who shook hands with his own executioners. We are those who went away and those who remained, those who came and stayed. We are the sons and daughters of all the dreamers. Our dreams may yet become us. Grimmie Mahler.